Please be seated.
Right. So I think we're with your first witness. Will you confirm that your name is Keita Sarah Kuheri?
Yes.
And that you are the Director of the Sustainable Land Use Division at the Ministry for the Environment?
Yes, I am.
And that you have provided a statement of evidence dated the 5th of February 2021?
Yes, I have.
That you confirm that you hold the qualifications, the whakapapa affiliations, and your role as outlined in paragraphs 8 to 10 of your evidence?
Yes, I do.
Are there any corrections that you need to make to your evidence?
Yes, there are. First is on page 2, paragraph 8. I think it was an autocorrect, so where it references Waimate, that should be Waimakariri.
If we have to work off the written one, I will just need to grab it.
Okay. So which paragraph?
Paragraph 8 on page 2, where I reference Waimate, that should be Waimakariri, and Greytown should be Greymouth.
Do you have any
Waimate
other...
should be Waimakariri?
Yes.
Yeah. And the second... Greymouth, not Greytown.
Yes.
Okay. Are there any other corrections?
Yes, and then on page 10, paragraph 52, where I've referred to 4 territorial authorities, that should be 5.
Relevant territorial authorities.
Yes.
Alrighty.
Subject to those corrections, do you confirm that your evidence is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Yes.
Now, you've prepared a summary, Ms. Kuheri, at the beginning of your evidence. Will you either read it or speak to it for the court, and then the court will ask you some questions followed by a cross-examination from counsel on the room?
I'm happy to read through the summary, although noting the conversations this morning, perhaps paragraph 5 and things have moved into perhaps a different direction. So as a record, I'm happy to read that. Mm-hmm. Okay, kia ora tātou. In 2018, the government announced its program to restore and protect New Zealand's freshwater, which includes an objective to reverse past damage and bring New Zealand's freshwater resources, waterways and ecosystems to a healthy state within a generation. The National Policy Statement for Freshwater Management 2020 is a key part of this program. NPSFM 2020 strengthens and clarifies Te Mano Te Wai by providing direction on how it should be applied when managing freshwater and imposes a hierarchy of obligations that means prioritising the health and well-being of water first. The 2019 Skelton investigation found the current ORC planning framework was not fit for purpose, and a new regional policy statement and regional plan needed to be developed to appropriately manage the expected deemed permit replacement applications. Following the investigation, the Minister for the Environment wrote to Otago Regional Council recommending both a new freshwater plan and an interim planning and consenting framework. The Ministry for the Environment, on behalf of the Minister, has committed in support of Plan Change 7 to the Regional Plan Water for Otago, PC7, but has concerns about the rigour of the notified non-complying pathway provided to grant consent for longer than 6 years. The Minister seeks to ensure MPS FM 2020 is given effect not just on paper in the new plan, but more importantly, given effect in practice by addressing over-allocation and bringing waterways to a healthy state within a generation. This will not be possible if significant volumes of water are locked up in existing consents until 2035 and beyond. As earlier referenced, number five is currently drafted, noting the evidence that was loaded last night. The non-complying pathway is not sufficiently rigorous and provides for an outcome that does not give effect to the MPS FM 2020 or the objective of Plan Change 7. I support an amended non-complying pathway that includes a test that will limit the ability for consents to be granted for more than 6 years, except in the most exceptional circumstances. This will allow for a timely implementation of MPS FM 2020 that can consider much of the water held under current deemed permits. Happy to take questions.
Thank you.
Questions?
No
questions from us. So we are with ORC.
Thank you, Your Honour. Good afternoon.
Kia ora.
Just one question from me, and it relates to paragraphs 4 and 45 of your evidence in chief, and perhaps I can take you to paragraph 45 where you've dealt with the issue in the body of your evidence. This relates to the NPS 2020 and the desire to restore ecosystems to a healthy state within a generation. Now, the word generation has been interpreted differently in different contexts, and this national policy statement doesn't in and of itself provide further guidance or direction. Can you describe for the court what your understanding of the use of the word generation in this national policy statement to mean? So what period of time are we talking about?
First, also the clause that the word generation is actually referenced, perhaps, so I know exactly what you're looking at. What clause references the word generation in the NPS 2020?
It is. Excuse me for a moment. Your Honour, I can't seem to locate the actual clause. However, the objective around when we're talking future state and future generations are, I interpret, intrinsic between RMA and the policies being now and in the future.
Is there something in the NPS that says you've got to sort it within a generation?
It's a reference. It's picked up in the framework section, or clause 1.3. And if I can take you to the six principles. You'll see subparagraph 4. Do you have the MPS in front of you there? 4,
yes.
Subparagraph B talks about present and future generations.
And also referent in paragraph E as well.
Yes.
So So it's your evidence that present and future generations means you've got to return... You've got to... I'm not sure whether you have to do all of these things, but anyway, you have to do something in relation to water within a generation, return it back to a healthy state within a generation.
That's right. There's been many public statements made by the Minister around that wording, around within a generation.
Within a generation. Well, it might be, but... I'm not sure what the status of those statements are. So I would not have interpreted that wording on its face as being within a generation, nor would I... What do you think a generation is? Naitahu's got a particular view on what a generation is.
I wouldn't like to put a number on it. I think, again, the principle around intergenerational restoration is where the generational conversation happens. So I would go around children and children's children.
So intergenerational, so not within a single generation, like your generation or my generation.
And that, I guess, would go where you're starting the counting of yours or my generation. Mm. So perhaps you may be a different generation to mine, with respect.
Sorry. Do you know that's just one
sorry.
Anyway, carry on.
Yes, so... where did I go with that one? So again, not a time frame. We're looking for intergenerational change consistent with the overarching Resource Management Act objectives around intergenerational responsibility. So I wouldn't want to put a time frame on it. However, there is an understanding from the Minister that change will take time. It's not an immediate... it's not going to be, we write an MPS and then tomorrow it will be enacted. There's a recognition that some of these changes will take time, but then also we need to make some immediate changes if required.
So just as you read and as you understand the NPS... And when I think about the long-term visions for freshwater, is it your understanding that those long-term visions, again, need to be given effect to or implemented within a generation, as you understand that to mean?
The vision, I think, the process is determined by the MPS to give effect to mana or te wai. The process that councils will inevitably go through with their constituents and mana whenua will clarify what that vision is and should be, as opposed to me dictating now what that would be.
So when we think about long-term visions for freshwater, the NPS does provide some assistance. If I could take you to clause 3.3... And there we see in subclause 2 that the long-term visions may be set at an FMU or part FMU or catchment level. And we see that they must set goals that are ambitious but reasonable. And perhaps importantly for this line of questioning, so identify a time frame to achieve those goals that is both ambitious and reasonable, for example, 30 years after the commencement date. So is it that language that equates to your understanding of what a generation might look like? So that's the length of time we're looking at in terms of the change that this national policy statement is seeking to achieve.
Yes, obviously subject to the stakeholders that councils as authors of plans need to develop with their constituents. So, for example, Otago's long-term vision may be 30 years, whereas you may have Canterbury who develop a vision that may be 100, for example.
So thinking about that, is it your evidence that the NPS doesn't itself set the time frame by which the achievements are to be made on the improvements?
And again, going back to the, and I'm sure there's a legal argument around these numbers and where we go with that, but the process with, that each region will inevitably go through to identify and land on a vision for the region and its freshwater management should provide some clarity once you've got your plans ready.
Thank you. Nothing further to explore. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Winchester.
Thank you, Your Honour. Tēnā koe, Ms. Kōhere. I represent Ngāi Tahu ki Murahiku, Kaitahu ki Otago and Te Runanga, or Ngāi Tahu. I just want to pick up on something that my learned friend Mr. Moore asked of you. And the NPS seems to be flexible enough to deal with different situations, because if I can draw your attention to clause 3.20 at page 22, that deals with more immediate action, doesn't it, in response to degradation. I'll just let you read that.
Can you repeat the question again, please?
Well, in certain circumstances, it directs much more direct and swift action, and clause 3.20 seems to be an example of that in terms of dealing with identified degradation. And so the sort of halting of degradation, or perhaps reversal of that, must happen as soon as practicable. So that could be within a generation, potentially, depending upon how you identified that.
Yes, and I think the words taking action to halt or reverse is particularly significant to that question.
Yes. All right, thank you. Now, I just wanted to ask you a more general question about NPS implementation. And there's been a suggestion by some parties to the hearing that the NPS can be effectively implemented through considering and potentially granting a set of resource consents for affected catchments throughout Otago. Are you aware of that theory that's been advanced?
I have read that, yes.
Yes. And part of that theory that's been advanced is that there is a sufficient level of scientific information about some of the catchments in terms of their ecology, in terms of their hydrology, and I guess core water-related science, and that of itself is sufficient to inform the setting of limits for the purposes of the NPS. Do you have a perspective on that?
The perspective I can add to that is through the Freshwater Implementation Group and the Freshwater Implementation Directors Group that has been directed by the Minister, is that we work with councils and sector groups to work through implementation. We are about 6 months through the development of that process, and My take from that is that there's a lot of work through to go through, to support councils to implement that. I have not heard that approach from the sector that we work with, that could be achieved that way.
So I guess another way of approaching the same issue, is it your understanding of the NPS that it requires a range of inputs and for a range of stakeholders to be involved in the process in order to feed in to all of the information and then set the ultimate limits, whether they be scientific or otherwise.
Yes, so obviously the Ministry's got a role in providing guidelines to support some of those conversations, given the wide range of stakeholders. So yes, the process does enable those wider conversations to happen.
And based on your understanding of the NPS and its various clauses, is that in fact directed and anticipated by the NPS, that there is, I guess, a multi-input approach which goes wider than just science?
Yes, that's actively how I understand most councils will do that.
Thank you. Now, you have talked about Te Mana o Te Wai and about its importance. In terms of what it means in individual circumstances, would you agree with the proposition that Te Mana o Te Wai won't mean the same thing to all people, and that it might be considered and defined differently, say, from one takiwā to another, or between different iwi and hapū?
I think the framework allows for that difference, whether it's directing it to be that specific or it's to be consistent across the board. I think the process enables for that, the regional differences that you're likely to have around what giving effect to Te Mana o Te Wai means through each region.
Thank you. And finally, I want to ask you some questions around your paragraphs 51 and 52 and specific provisions for municipal drinking water. And you talk earlier in your evidence about the need for true exceptions to be provided for. Is my understanding of your evidence that municipal drinking water supplies would be a true exception from, in terms of the way you look at it?
I'm not sure I'm that absolute yet, given there's some planning conferencing around how you might identify absolute exceptions at this point. However, the three waters reform as well is actually part of the government's freshwater program. So I think considering the evidence on behalf of the territorial authorities and the reform that's coming, those factors need to be considered together, as opposed to I can actually say that that's an absolute exception. So I think there's some technical planning conferencing that needs to happen to determine what that is, what's the extent.
All right, but this is your evidence,
yes.
And I suspect either the Ministry or the Minister's policy position. So in terms of your view and the Ministry's position that specific provisions should be made for municipal drinking water, is it your view that it's a true exception that needs to be provided for, specifically provided for in this framework?
Again, around defining true exceptions, I'll leave that to planning experts. However, it's clear in the hierarchy that it is a priority, and the term obviously amongst those territorial authorities who would be responsible for providing that water, the clarity over how long they need it for, how much is required, etc., is detail that could be worked through.
Okay. So in terms of that exercise that you've just referred to, presumably you wouldn't want to have a situation where provision of municipal drinking water supplies as a second order priority had an impact on the health and well-being of water bodies as a first order priority.
No, well, my evidence doesn't say that. So there is provision for that, but obviously you've got to weigh it up with the hierarchy to the well-being of the body, the water body.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, if you make specific provision for a second order priority, which actually singles it out, doesn't that run the risk that it might prevail over the first order priority, which is ensuring that the health and well-being of water bodies is provided for?
I think that goes to our legal submissions that gave a time frame around 35 down to 15. My evidence reference is longer than 6 years, so I think it's the combination on there and then the over time, making sure that you're giving effect to te mana o te wai is the intent.
All right. Thank you. And I just want to draw your attention to some specific words in your paragraph 52. And in the second sentence, and I know you're not necessarily across the planning detail, but you've said that the qualified exemption to provide the pathway, this is necessary to give effect to the NPS FM 2020 and Te Mana o Te Wai's second priority on the hierarchy. Is it your understanding that in this plan change that the Regional Council is actually substantively giving effect to the NPS FM?
I think it's procedural. As we know, I guess through the submissions, we know the longer term response to giving effect to the NPS FM will come through the wider plan change.
So what do you mean procedural?
This plan change. So
it's procedural?
Yes.
So it's not substantive. I think Council's questions was that this looks like a substantive response. Was that where you were going with this?
Well, that's what it says on the
screen. Oh, I know what it says too, so that's what you say.
Okay.
Well, I don't know, do you say that? Which I think all Mr. Winchester wants to do is trying to understand it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, well, given the evidence provided by territorial authorities, and again, it lands a lot on how long that would be granted for, and the detail around is municipal, and that can be varied, as I understand it, whether you can accurately say that that is or not. So on the face of it, yes, but obviously subject to the detail that planners will work through.
All right. Thank you for that clarification. Thank you, Your Honour.
Okay. Just getting a bit of feedback. Jared, can you hear the feedback that we're getting? Okay. Wasn't sure if it was you, Mr. Winchester, or your mic, but anyway, just a bit of feedback coming from someone.
That's all right.
Okie dokie. Fish and Game, not here. Crossbow.
Good afternoon.
Kia ora.
I act for Trustpower Generator in this region and throughout the country, and so I have some questions around some of the focus on or lack of focus on the renewable electricity generation NPS. And in that regard, your statement of evidence doesn't refer to the MPS REG, does it?
No.
Sorry, I can't hear. No. In terms of the MPS freshwater management itself, policy 4 of the MPS states that freshwater is managed as part of New Zealand's integrated response to climate change, doesn't it?
Pretty well in the beginning, page 9. So it's actually the policy is under clause 2.2 and it's policy 4.
Oh, is that right?
No, my apologies, I should have directed.
Everyone went to the back.
I left mine on the other side of the room, ma'am. So that's correct, isn't it? That's what policy 4 says.
That's right.
Yes. And in a day where I woke up listening to the news that New Zealand has imported the most coal since 2006, would you also accept that hydro generation is important in the context of the nation's response to climate change?
Yes.
Yes. And in respect of policy 15 or similarly, and that's on the following page, page 10, that states that communities are enabled to provide for their social, economic and cultural well-being in a way that's consistent with the MPS. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And you would accept that electricity generation is important in the context of well-being?
Yes.
Yes. Now, in your evidence, at I think it is paragraph 52, Mr. Winchester was just questioning you on, you state that water takes for drinking water are a second order priority under the MPS objective. And that would be under on page 9, is the second order. Correct?
Correct.
And you consider that providing a pathway for the taking of water for municipal drinking supply for durations of more than 6 years is appropriate?
Yes.
Yes. In fact, you go so far as to say it's necessary, don't you?
Yes.
Yes. Now, with the person with oversight of the MPS FM, I assume you have read the Section 32 analysis that was prepared for the MPS on freshwater?
Yes.
Yes. And I want to provide a document to you. I asked Mr. De Placemaker about it last week, and I'm not going to push my luck by asking questions without putting the document in front of you for a second time. So if I may provide just an excerpt of that.
What is it?
It's the MFE, it's the MFE's own publication, Section 32 evaluation on the MPS.
On the MPS?
Yes. I just don't want to ask a question without having put it in front of the witness, ma'am. Thank you. And could you please confirm that this document is entitled Section 32 Evaluation, Ministry for the Environment?
Yes.
And on the second page, the date of issue is 22 July 2020?
Yes.
And it appears to be an excerpt of that larger document. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. And if you could turn to the final page of that excerpt, which is numbered page 46 at the top. The authors of the Section 32 report state that Policy 4, which is what we've just been through, contributes to achieving the Objective 2.11b, and that's the health needs of people, and C, which is the ability of people and communities to provide for their social, economic and cultural well-being by preserving hydroelectricity flexibility, which will secure renewable electricity generation, which is important for meeting the health needs of people, clause B, as well as enabling communities to provide for their social, cultural and economic well-being now and into the future, clause C. It says that, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yes. And so I suppose my question, at least in terms of the author's view of this document, hydroelectricity is seen as both a Tier 2 and a Tier 3 objective.
Bear with me for a minute.
Yeah, that's fine. Yes. And would you agree with those authors?
I think while the timing of with what is known when you're drafting a document like this, and then when we're into the rigour of actually implementing it, obviously with lessons along the way, some things can change. So if I had have agreed with that, I would have documented that in much the same way I had with drinking water.
I missed the last bit. If you had agreed with that.
If I had agreed with that,
right.
Then I would have documented it.
Yes.
In February. I mean, there was enough insight since the drafting of Section 32 to September,
mm-hmm.
when it became action, and then the drafting of this in February, and as we know, even more time since February, there are positions and things moving since then. So
is it fair to say, although the authors of the Section 32 report found hydroelectricity to be a Tier 2 and Tier 3, you disagree with that assessment?
I think as well, this goes to my earlier comments around true exceptions, and planning advice could inform that. I don't believe I'm in that position right now without that planning advice to accurately land on, yes, it's a Tier 2.
Yes, and you haven't qualified yourself as an expert in these proceedings,
right.
Have you? Yes, so I don't think I'll take that any further. Thank you, Mum.
Mr. Page.
Thank you. I'm going to ask you some questions by reference to documents that are in Volume 5 of the Common Bundle. I don't think it's on the desk in front of you. Perhaps Madam Registrar will find it. It's the Volume 5, tabs 12 to 23. If you've got the bundle in front of you, can you turn to tab 12C? And with luck, you will find the Minister's recommendation to the Otago Regional Council.
I did have that.
What's that?
I did have it.
You did? I'm sorry to put you to the trouble of finding it again. So it's page 1478 of the Common Bundle that I'm asking you to look at, because there we find the Minister's third recommendation and his reasons. Do you have that?
Yes, I do.
Now, just for context, there has been a certain amount of discussion in the courtroom since we began about whether this plan change is really a purely procedural tool or whether it also has some environmental imperatives that go with it. Do you understand that?
Yes.
And when you look at the recommendation itself on page Common Bundle 1478 and the paragraph that follows, can you tell me your view about what the Minister's intention was? Was it procedural, or was it procedural plus environmental gains?
I think I've already referenced in an earlier answer that I thought it was procedural.
Okay. Staying in the same bundle then, can I have get you to look at tab 12A? And there you will have the Minister's referral direction to the Environment Court. Do you have that?
Yes, I do.
Now, if we look at the subparagraph C, and I'll read it so that we all know where we are, the plan change affects or is likely to affect areas of national significance, noting that Otago freshwater catchments provide a habitat for a suite of nationally important non-migratory Galaxias taxas. You see that? Is it your understanding that the plan change was intending to do something about that habitat for Galaxias species? What was the point of mentioning it?
Again, this is probably where the expert conferencing can clarify around what the legal position is. So where we reference fish passage through the NPS, that is where I consider the plan change was heading at that point.
I think it's a fair question by Mr. Page. He's not waiting for your answer. He no. wants to know what you think before you go to an expert conference. So he's trying to pin you down, and it's actually not unreasonable.
No.
Because other witnesses have also been pinned in the same way. What was your thinking? What was your thinking? So that everybody understands what are the different points of views prior to getting in a conference, because we don't have time to allow that to unfold.
So going back to your earlier question around environmental effects,
yes.
And obviously you're in a room with experts who can test the extent of that. So where possible, to provide for environmental protection along the way, I suspect, knowing that you've got a wider plan change coming in 2023, it would... Wouldn't it be counter to the intent?
Well, that's the question. What is the intent?
And exactly, the experts can contribute to that. So where there's the option to include it that doesn't hold up the procedural nature of the plan change, then wouldn't you include it?
You're presumably familiar with Mr. Ensor's evidence.
Yes.
And Mr. Ensor,
can I qualify that to the level of its technical planning evidence?
Yes.
Yes.
But you will have studied the controlled activity pathway that he supports.
Yes.
And that is effectively a pathway that enables existing permit holders to, for want of a better description, roll over their permits for 6 years and carry on, right?
That's right.
Do you agree with me that there is nothing concerned with improving the lot of Galaxias in that pathway?
Sorry, say that again.
There is nothing in Mr. Ensor's controlled activity pathway concerned with improving the lot of Galaxias species.
Yeah, and I have referenced in earlier responses as well the over a generation. So there's a step changes towards that change. Right. Again, if there's an opportunity for that right now, then again, conferencing perhaps may find a pathway forward for that.
Yeah, but if Mr. Ensor's non-controlled pathway doesn't deal with the question of risk to Galaxia species, is it your understanding that the Minister's intention was that there would be a consenting pathway that enabled those kinds of critical threat and species habitat issues to be addressed?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Nothing further.
Why do you say that?
Was that directed
yeah.
to me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, it's the suite, and I guess it may be because I'm at a policy level around the intent, looking at the bigger picture where we are heading with this NPS. The Minister directed an interim plan change, and if there's an opportunity to deliver on that journey towards the ultimate change over a generation, then where you can provide some kind of relief or where it affects the fish passage, then you would enable it.
Over a generation?
Over a generation.
For this plan change, it's only hopefully 6 years before we get another plan. Yes. Plans. That's not really a generation, is it?
Well, the intent of the plan in 6 years, the new one that will be notified in 2023, should lead you on the path towards that change.
Yes. The other way of looking at this, because where Council's question goes, and Mr. Page, correct me if I'm wrong, is that if there ought to be an opportunity to have merits-based resource consent applications for periods longer than 6 years at a wide scale in Otago, you should take that opportunity up because this sub-provision talks about galaxies. So I don't know whether if that is where you're going, merits-based.
Yes.
So do you know what he's getting at there? What he's saying is that instead of consents being rolled over for 6 years subject to the actual take and maybe subject to efficiency, I don't know what people will land on that, he is saying that if there's an opportunity to improve the environment for galaxids, applicants should be able to put forward their application on that basis for consents up to and including 35 years. And you've just agreed with him.
No, so not up to the 35
years. Oh, what do you think you're agreeing to?
To the, again, our legal submissions talked about...
No, what are you agreeing to? Because this is your evidence.
So, no, not for 35 years. Sorry, that wasn't clear.
Okay, all right.
In that line of questioning.
So I'm trying to put... So the witnesses understand your theory of the case. No, I don't think this witness does. I'm trying to put it as you would have it because you want to secure Mr. Page the opportunity to have a merits-based assessment for resource consents that would see them granted for a period up to 35 years. That's correct, isn't it?
Well,
subject to
and then it's definitely
good things for galaxids.
Only galaxids.
And that's definitely not the position of the Minister for 35 years.
I don't care what the Minister thinks. It's actually it's your evidence now, so you now have to bring it to your evidence.
Yes, so I'm consistent with our legal submissions around the maximum of 15 years.
Oh, Lord. Okay.
So the yes answer to my last question was predicated on a term expiring in 2035.
Is 15 years.
All right. Can you tell me how you get to 15 years?
I'm relying on our legal submissions
Yeah, but you're the policy planner.
Yes.
There was a discussion between you and Mr. Moore about what a generation is, and I really don't know quite where we landed on that, but at least 15 years is a number we understand, right? What I want to know is why your support for a consenting pathway is predicated on a 15-year term.
So, again, and thank you for taking me down a path. There is a range of consents we are talking about here. Yes. My evidence references it between 6 and 15 years. So the 6 initially was the preferred position because it was an interim plan change. Give the council some time to develop the full plan change and where the region is going in terms of its freshwater management.
Yes, good.
Now, so I support our legal submissions shifting that to allow some flexibility to some of those consent holders. Whether it's merit-based is another conversation that I believe is between planning evidence and legal evidence.
All right. But you say that there's an opportunity to have a consenting pathway until 2035. Now, I understand the maths behind how we get to 6 years relative to the Land and Water Regional Plan becoming operative. That kind of makes some sense to me. What I don't know is why the year 2035 holds some kind of magic. Is there something around the Minister's intentions around implementing the NPS that we're not being told here that 2035 has some significance?
No, it's merely, no, there isn't a minister's intention around 2035. Rather, it's been responding to proposed dates,
okay.
And that has been acceptable.
All right. So you're simply reacting to what was publicly notified, and the non-complying pathway had 2035 as the cut-off period, and you're simply saying the minister is okay with that?
Can you re-say that again, I'm cautious around your line of questioning?
So I'm not trying to trick you, I promise. Your support for the 2035 cut-off for resource consents, is that simply a reflection...
To a maximum.
Yes, but is that simply a reflection of what was publicly notified by the Regional Council, which had 2035 as the end point for the non-complying activity status?
I think an acknowledgement around the practicality of some of them as opposed to a 5-year one. So the municipal consents for 6 years may not be practicable.
Right.
Hence why you need the exceptional conversation with the planning experts.
Okay. And does it follow that if there were, for example, some kind of significant infrastructure change required to protect galaxid habitat, then that might be a similar kind of reason why a longer-term consent might be required. Might be appropriate, should I say.
Perhaps. Without a detailed example, it's hard to tell.
Nothing further, Mum.
Ms. Irving.
I have no further questions.
So just one point of clarification, and if you don't know, you should say so. Okay?
Yeah.
So just looking at that document 12A, which is the ministerial direction to the Environment Court, and again on subparagraph C, and where it is noted the plan change affects or is likely to affect areas of national significance. What did you understand that part of the of subparagraph C to be talking about? Where is the focus? Is it focus? Yeah.
Sure, sorry.
So you're not entirely sure what the Minister means when he says the plan change affects areas of national significance.
Yeah, I'd need to get some clarification. Okay. And right. I'm happy to table that if required.
Ms. Dixon, have you got any re-examination? All right, thank you. All right, well, thank you very much for your evidence.
Thanks.
Mm. Okie dokie. So, I think that brings us through to you, Ms. Williams.
Yep.
Oh, actually, before we do, what are we meant to do with this, Mr. Walsh? You handed it up. It's not in the common bundle, is it?
No, it's not in the common bundle, and I hadn't thought of presenting it, well, including it at the time in the common bundle. So I was just wondering if we assign it an exhibit number. Yes. Well, I may very well put it to the other MFE witness.
So that might be helpful to give it an exhibit number so it's not lost in our evidence.
Yes.
Right.
Mum, I know it's a bit messy, but
yeah,
I don't
messy.
Want to
That's
keep
why
on
we
referring
have common bundles,
to a document.
But
yeah.
We will call it Exhibit Trustpower 1.
Thank you, Mum.
Which is an extract from Section 32 Evaluation Report. That's on the proposed NPS Freshwater Management 2020. All right. Why? And that's good. And why I thought there might be more than one generator is that that report also talks about Pioneer, Trustpower, and is it Contact being in the room for Otago? Was that not quite right?
No, though, I don't think the report does. I think the Minister's directions for the call-in does.
Yeah, yeah.
So that definitely does. I just don't have that in front of me to give you the reference in the what part of his paragraph.
Yeah.
But that's where you get those three generators.
So there are three generators, though?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, yeah.
I understand from Ms. Dixon, who has an intimate familiarity with the Clutha scheme, that doesn't operate on any deemed permits.
Mm.
I'd say that given the submission of Pioneer, that it does.
It does.
But they have taken no active role in these proceedings throughout. And Trustpower does in terms of those small...
And is Contact the Clutha scheme, is it?
Correct.
Oh, okay, I'm with you. All right.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. We have your submissions.
I'll also hand up at this time, Your Honour. I do refer to that Wee Auckland Regional Council case, and I'll have some parts of it.
Okay, Ms. Williams, we're in your hands.
Thank you, Your Honour. Your Honour, I have taken a slightly untraditional route to the writing of these submissions.
That's all right, everybody else has taken a non-lineal approach to this case.
Indeed. Indeed. And so I've actually started with Te Mana o Te Wai.
Mm-hmm.
And my reason for starting with Te Mana o Te Wai is because, as Your Honour said the other day, this is a fundamental concept which infuses all matters in relation to freshwater management. And so I have started with setting out clauses 1 and 2 of section 1.3 of the National Policy Statement for Freshwater Management 2020, and then I've carried on to set out the hierarchy of obligations at 1.3 clause 5, and then noted that again those hierarchy of obligations are reiterated at Objective 2.1, but this is in the context of how freshwater is to be managed as part of all natural and physical resources. And so I've set that out there as well, Your Honour. So Te Mana o Te Wai and the hierarchy of obligations must be relevant to these proceedings in my submission. They seek to at least hold the line and not further detract from the Māori of Te Wai in water bodies, and this is, of course, also relevant to the land, the whenua, in the Otago region. However, in relation to the National Policy Statement, other than that fundamental concept of Te Mana o Te Wai and some limited provisions, which we've already discussed this morning and I'm going to discuss again later, I do submit that the current proceedings are not intended to give effect to the National Policy Statement. There are a number of additional steps to be completed, especially relating to the roles of tangata whenua encompassed in Te Mana o Te Wai, and it is not reasonably practicable for those to be completed at this time. Moving on to the Otago region and this plan change, the region poses unique challenges for the management of its freshwater resources. There's a missing full stop there, I apologise. This includes the pending expiry of, as we've heard, a large number of deemed permits, and it appears that it has grown from 200 other consents to a great deal more when I look at Ms Gilroy's evidence by the end of 2025. So those and other challenges are described in Professor Skelton's investigation and resulting report that identified deficiencies in the Council's planning framework and the resulting management of the region's freshwater resources. In response to that, the Minister for the Environment has made recommendations to the Council. They have, in response again in part, and again we've identified that this is recommendation three, initiated this plan change. And then the Council then requested the Minister to call in the plan change to the Environment Court, which of course is a request that the Minister accepted. So as stated by Mr Moore for the Council, Plan Change 7 is intended to allow for an efficient and timely transition to a new land and freshwater management regime. Again, as stated above, it is not intended to fully implement the current National Policy Statement or prior versions. Its purpose is to provide a short breathing space for a new NPS-compliant planning framework to be put in place while not exacerbating effects on the environment in the interim. I draw to your attention that the Director General of Conservation, Tumuaki Ahere, has statutory responsibility to manage freshwater fisheries. This is alongside fish and game, and to advocate the conservation of aquatic life and freshwater fisheries generally. So the Director General has submitted on the plan changes notified, generally supportive of the intent behind the plan change and seeking to clarify and improve aspects to achieve its intended purpose. I now move to talking about the endemic freshwater fisheries and in particular the non-diadromous Galaxias taxa. And we've already been referring to this clause in the Minister's direction, which is clause C. Sorry, Your Honour, I'm just trying to find the reference. This is tab 12A, CB 1472, which we have just been talking about.
So are you able to assist me on what is meant by areas of national significance? What is an area of national significance?
Yes. And so in my submission, Your Honour, that's where the evidence of Dr Ellerbone and Dr Dunn is relevant to the court, because they describe not just that Otago has a very diverse freshwater fauna, including taonga species of importance to Ngārūnanga, but it also has these remarkable suite of endemic non-diadromous Galaxias. And I do want to just spend a little time on this, Your Honour, because endemic, and I've included a definition which I've got off the internet, so it's what it is. But endemic I'm using it as an adjective to mean native and restricted to a certain place, and that is really important here, because actually what these non-diadromous Galaxias fish do is they express the geography, the long-term climatic impact, all of those things of the water bodies and the surrounding land, the surrounding whenua. So we have in the lexicon now of the RMA planning framework the term biogeographic river capture. And that refers to
When was that popped up?
And that is in the Kawarau Water Conservation Order, which is relevant to this proceeding. Okay. And that's because the Nevis Amendment to the Kawarau Water Conservation Order recognised specifically the scientific attribute of that water body. And that's because once upon a time the Nevis River flowed south into the Matauda catchment. At some point over time, geological forces occurred. The Nevis turned around, essentially, began to flow north. And that separation and isolation of the Galaxias in the Nevis has led to the separation of the Nevis Galaxias and the Gollum Galaxias, which is what you find mostly in Southland.
I have come across the Gollum.
Yes, you have come across the Gollum Galaxias. Yeah. And now you understand the genetic lineage. And the same is true, Your Honour, for the various other different non-diadromous galaxids throughout the Otago region. They actually are an expression of the land and of the water and how the separation has occurred. So they embody, in many respects, the history of the place.
And I understand that. But my question about what is meant by areas of national significance, I know that these little fish, you know, maybe threatened or worse, but is that what's meant by an area of national significance? That I don't understand that phrase.
So this is where we are getting into that evidence of Dr. Ellibone and also Dr. Dunn, which is talking about the distribution and the subpopulations and location of the subpopulations of these fish.
So your submission is that the minister, when he refers to areas of national significance, he means the distribution of threatened species.
Yes,
that is what he's talking about.
Yes, Your Honour. In my submission, that's the only way in which that comment can be interpreted. Well,
and that's really what I was after. So can I make a note of that? All right, with that in mind, that the minister is referring to the distribution of threatened galaxids, is the minister also saying, therefore, this plan change must deal with the threat to this fish species by having an environmental outcome? Or does that necessarily follow? Or is this minister saying the plan change encompasses areas where where threatened species are, and therefore something? But he doesn't go as far as saying, and therefore right back, you know, right in protection or some measure for the galaxids?
Your Honour, I don't know that it is going that far, but I think it is a factor that must be borne in mind. And if the Minister was wanting to direct a plan change, which was indeed to enhance Galaxias habitat, it needed to say that, and it doesn't. It doesn't go that far. Mm. And that's not necessarily what the Director General is seeking. However, what in my submission the plan change must keep in mind and look to achieve, and I address this further as well, Your Honour, is that there is no additional harm, there is no additional degradation. And that's the issue, and that's I do feel like I talk about little fish a lot in Otago, but that is the issue, is that they are not just at risk, they are threatened, they are precious, they are significantly... Yeah, there are major concerns about those species, and for example, and again this is in I think Dr. Dunn's evidence, the Clutha Flathead Galaxias is classified as nationally critical because the expectation is that more than 70% will be gone within the next 10 years. So that's the reason it has that threat classification, because there is an expectation that there will be ongoing loss. And it's to minimise the extent of the ongoing loss is I guess, what the Director General is seeking here.
All right, understood.
Moving to paragraph 13, maybe somewhat repetitive, Your Honour, I apologise. The national significance of the non-diadromous Galaxia species arises because of the endemism. Not only are they not found anywhere else in the world, most of these species are not even found in other regions of Aotearoa. They come within the suited category of threatened. That brings them within the threatened species compulsory value. And I note that, Your Honour, but I also note that because that's a matter which is part of a substantive implementation of the NPS, I don't take that any further. However, this is what makes that an issue of national significance. The submission seeks to ensure that while in the interim we are holding the line and not further degrading the Māori of Te Wai for Otago's water bodies and freshwater ecosystems, we do not lose sight of these special and remarkable freshwater fish and their needs and habitat. And that is relevant to Council's stated intention to avoid exacerbating effects on the environment until the new planning regime is in place. So moving to legal matters relevant to your consideration, again, Mr. Moore has helpfully set out relevant legal requirements for consideration of plans from Part 5 of the Act, and I adopt those submissions and do not propose to further address those. Similarly, in relation to Section 8 dealing with Te Tiriti, I also adopt the legal submissions of Mr. Moore, and I note that the further statutory processes which the plan change is intended to facilitate will provide a much greater opportunity for persons making decisions on Otago's freshwater resources in future to take account of the principles of Te Tiriti, as those will have been amplified by the full implementation of the NPS. A major issue in the Otago region is the current existence and pending expiry of deemed permits, and I'm now turning to the priority conditions
we'll
of some of those.
Adjournment before you do that. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honour.
All rise.